All right, welcome everybody. We're going to get started because we have a lot to get through in a short amount of time. So if you have questions, we ask that you write them down. We'll hopefully have time at the end to go over those questions. You want to stick around because at the end you're going to be able to pick up some free seeds, some free catalogs, and it'll be worth sticking around. So anyways, my name is Timothy Campo. This is my wife, Shannon. She's a master gardener in Michigan. And we'll be talking about 7 ways to garden greener. And I'll start out with a quick prayer. Heavenly Father, thank you for this opportunity. I thank you for the creation you've made and the example that we learned through creation and through plants and growing. And I just pray that this will be a learning experience and we'll be encouraged to grow more food. And thank you in Yeshua's name. Okay, we'll go over the 7 points real quick. Just a reminder, we have a PDF available of this presentation on our website, which will be available if you're interested.
We have our business card with our website on it that you can pick up and take home with you. So if you don't get it all written down fast enough, you will be able to have all of this information in our website.
Okay, we'll be talking about whole system thinking, the soil, seeds and plants, water, integrated pest management, organic and beyond organic. Okay, first is whole system thinking, and we want to encourage you, if you're starting out in gardening, to plan from start to finish. There's a lot involved, and it's easy to get discouraged if you're not planning the whole process through.
Things that are involved are your environment. Do you have soil? Do you need to make soil? What temperature? What zone do you live in? Rainfall, sun, animals. If you plant and you have deer wipe out everything, that just is very discouraging. And if you have sun or shade where you live. Another thing is time. How much time do you actually have to be in the garden? We have all these wonderful plants in the spring, and then you get to the middle of summer and you're like, no. So think about how much time you actually want to be in the garden and doing the garden tasks. And then your size. What can you actually manage and still be joyful doing it? That's something to put into practice, to plan, and then how much are you actually going to eat? You know, if you hate eggplant. If you hate eggplant, why grow it? Unless, you know. So think about that as well.
Okay. Another aspect of whole system thinking is management and managing your garden.
So with your soil, amending, weeding, replacing nutrients are all things that's a management 5-year plan kind of thing. Water, how do you plan to water? Do you have water? Can you get water to where it's supposed to go? And your workforce, who can you Shanghai into helping you in the garden? And sometimes it's very helpful if you have a few people that you can direct and help you in getting everything done.
An important thing we want to emphasize in this presentation is to keep learning, because you may be doing things that are working for you, but it's good to try new things, and we'll get into some of that.
Okay, so research your problems. I know a lot of people, they see a bug and they're like, kill it, 7 on everything. And so learn how to research. Just like you learn how to research and learn your Torah, you can do the same thing with gardening. Go to your local library. Go to your extension. I'm an advanced master gardener in Michigan. Our purpose is to help you. Go to other gardeners. You know, the old guy that always has something at the farmer's market growing organically? Pick his brain. Learn to get him to like you so he'll tell you everything. The internet is another good place to look up things. And then learn new ideas. We've done something the same way for the last 50 years. Well, that doesn't mean there might be a better way of doing something that's out there, a new tool. And the last thing is to try new things. Experiment, you know. Maybe this tomato will do better than that tomato. Maybe this tool will make it easier on my back now that I can't bend over as easy. Maybe this watering system is easier to do. So those are all things to think about and to actively seek. And usually in the wintertime is a great time to do that because you're not busier than I'll get out in the summertime.
Okay. To break it up a little bit, we have this identification just to, you know, a fun thing to do. If you notice what it is, there's going to be a series of pictures. If you know what it is, just shout it out. That's fine. We're just going to go through here.
Oh, yes.
This was definitely a problem this year for a lot of people.
Squash bugs are evil.
Okay, this chart is average mineral content in selected vegetables from 1914 to 1997. And pretty much it's the trend is getting less and less, and there's lots of reasons for that, including practices, the soil content, and what we're putting back into the soil. But that's something that we want to change in our own gardens.
This is that was a chart on content in, within the vegetable or within the soil?
Within the vegetable, that so they yes, in the vegetable.
So is your, how's your soil looking?
Right, that's what we're going to.
Depleted in the soil there because it's not being taken up by the plant.
We're going to keep getting to that.
It's probably a combination of things, and yeah, the fertilizers that are being used are chemical, and that causes. Anyway, we'll get into it. Okay, next we're going to talk about soil, and everything garden starts with the soil.
Okay, compaction affects the water and airflow needed by the roots, so that is something when you have soil and you have good soil, take care of it. Treat it like it's precious, because it really is. Let's see, for healthy, nutritious plants, build up your soil. It's not about building up your plant. It's about building up your soil first. And if you think about it from that standpoint, that's a long-term standpoint rather than a three-month standpoint. You're working towards the future of your garden for the next year's crop this year. 80% of your plant problems are due to poor soil. If you have healthy plants, they will be much able to withstand drought, bugs. They won't set off the pheromones to attract insects. Everything starts with that soil. And NPK, how many of you guys know what NPK is? Nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. Those are the three big ones that they think is all there is for nutrients. That's only three things of 90 that your soil actually needs. There's other macronutrients that your plants need, and there's many, many micronutrients. And in trace amounts, those are just as important as the big guys. And so your bag of fertilizer that only gives people three things would be like giving your kid, you know, milk, eggs, and a hamburger, but they're not getting the lettuce and the tomato and the, you know, all the other parts that is needed to have a healthy diet. And then your healthy soil has an underground city, and that's got microbes, earthworms, insects, mitozoa, your fungi. All these things work together as a whole to make your plants healthy, and that's very, very important to have that. And then compaction is detrimental to soil life, as I've already said.
Okay, next we're going to talk about composting. And we encourage you, if you're not doing your own compost, to make your own.
Yeah, it's killing me here. I am throwing away, and so many other people are throwing away all this stuff out of the kitchen. Oh, no! So composting is all about green and brown. And which is nitrogen is your green and brown is your carbon-rich materials. And there is a ton of information in books on the internet to go into that. We could probably teach a two-hour class on just composting alone. But it's extremely fascinating, very interesting. It cuts your garbage down by significant amounts. And I encourage you to do that. Example of green is kitchen food scraps and coffee grounds for the short list. An example of browns is dried leaves and cardboard that's shredded up. So that gives you an idea what that is. And next thing is leaf mold is an extremely easy source of compost if you live in a place with lots of trees. That's something that we don't have time to cover right now. Usually it's like one green to two brown, and if your pile's stinky, then you need more brown. If your pile's really dry, you need more green to keep that balance in there. And it depends on what you put in. They have charts with how much nitrogen is in something, how much carbon is in something, so if you want to get really technical. But if you just put it all in a big pile and let it stew, that works too. I'm sorry, can we keep questions
to the end, please, because we're going to run out of time.
And the leaf mold's a really good source of compost, and to speed up its decomposition, if you put coffee grounds in there from your local coffee ground shop that gives them away, that helps a lot. And if you chip them by running them over with your lawnmower, that helps speed that up too.
All right, if you go to purchase compost, which many do because it's an easy solution, you want to make sure you're checking your sources, because there are some things you might not consider, like is the compost that you're purchasing made with a GMO product as it made with humanure. It might sound nice, but it's sewage sludge, actually, and you don't want to mess with that. Is it made with plants that have been sprayed with systemic herbicides, and you put that on your garden, you're like, oh, why am I all my plants dying? Well, now you know. Okay, next we're going to cover mulching real quick.
The benefits are it covers and protects the ground, it suppresses weeds, and it conserves moisture. This is why our prairies blew away when they took all that top off. Organic mulches always improve the soil, and that's bark, straw, grass, leaf, and green manure. And then there's inorganic mulches, which are stone, brick, gravel, crushed glass. And those have their places for paths and things like that. If you want to improve your soil, you want to stay with the organic ones.
Okay, now mulching sounds great, but we've did a lot of mulching this past year, and we've run into some issues, including termites, pill bugs, and slugs. So every good thing has a negative, it seems. Also, you want to be aware of treated lumber, you know, painted wood, or other waste materials that you don't want to add. Okay, when you're starting a new garden, if you're doing raised beds, for example, you're going to want to add soil.
And you really want to make sure you know your sources on that. You want it to be a reputable, someone you can go back to and say, hey, if you can get it organic, we got topsoil once and there's glass shards in it, which meant I couldn't garden with my bare hands for a while until I got all that cleaned up. So, and then think about what toxins, garbage, weed seeds could be in your, you may not ever have bindweed and then all of a sudden, you know, you've got it covered with it. So try to purchase organic topsoil or compost from a reputable source. Get to know your people that you work with. Get to have a relationship with them, and that'll go a long way. And then consider making raised beds. If you have extremely poor soil, if you have really bad clay, or if you're like us and we literally live on a sand dune, we have raised beds or nothing would grow.
Yeah, I'll see that in the next slide.
And then the goal. The goal is to have a correct balance of soil, water, nutrients, and air for healthy plants. You have to have air in the ground for your plants, and we don't ever think about that concept. The roots need air. And so you want to make this great tilly loam is what you're looking for those plants.
Okay, last year, well, we've been doing raised beds for like 3 or 4 years now, and last year I read a book about the depth of your soil and how the roots are a lot deeper than we realize. And I added an extra layer to my raised beds, and you can see from the picture on the left, the plants are not doing near as well, and
there's sand, but nothing grows on it. You don't have to weed it.
Yeah, the ones on the right were like twice the size and a lot more fruit and better fruit. Sorry, save your questions. I didn't.
We can't hear you either. We use the cedar boards, if that's what you're asking about the wood. We use cedar boards.
Okay. Call it out if you know what it is.
Cucumber.
Yes. There's a striped and a spotted variation of this evil thing.
All right, next we're going to talk about seeds and plants.
All right, we're going to go over seed types really quick to give you a little bit of an understanding. There's open pollinated, which means that this plant, if it's pollinated by itself again, will make the same thing. So you plant a Brandywine tomato, and next year when you plant those seeds, you will get another Brandywine tomato. An heirloom is an open pollinated plant with a story. My grandma and her grandma planted this Brandywine tomato, and when I plant those seeds, I've got a Brandywine tomato that's Aunt Great Aunt Grandma's tomato. It's a story. There's a story, and it's usually been in a family for a certain amount of time. Both of those are great things to do if you want to save seed. Those are really good ones to do. A hybrid is a it's when you see F1 on the package, and what it is they took a Brandywine, which splits like crazy, has great taste, but you can't do anything with it once it gets off the shelf except eat it that day. And they took another tomato, say a beefsteak or something like that, that has a little bit harder skin, and they crossed them and made a Brandywine that doesn't split open on you the second you touch it. Okay, they haven't gone through 7 generations to make that an open pollinated tomato. That's how many generations average, if you're a good seed grower person, to make a hybrid go into a open pollinated seed. It's not in their best interest to do that because they want to sell you that sturdy Brandywine the next year. It's a business thing. It's also that plant also has something called hybrid vigor because it takes some of the good stuff from each one of them and puts them together and does a good job, whereas your heirlooms and your open pollinated are kind of inbred, actually. They can be very inbred, and so sometimes they lose some of that, you know, vigor by that. A GMO is a genetically modified organism. It is created by taking DNA of things that are not plants and cramming them into the DNA of a plant and totally destroying the structure, messing up the genetic diversity. It is no longer, in my mind, a clean seed. It is something other than a plant at that point. So I'm extremely biased. But yes, we do want, don't get, I highly encourage you not to get a GMO. And generally, most average gardeners, home gardeners, are never going to come in contact with a GMO seed without a license agreement patent thing. But if you grow corn and it cross-pollinates with the GMO field next to you, you may be unwittingly growing GMO. So that's when you have to be very careful. But as a general rule, you don't normally hit that right now, not yet. But I'm sure they're trying to change that. Seed treatments. I'm going to give you some words that you may not may have heard but not understood what they meant. Soaking, pretty standard. Water is what causes a seed to germinate, and that's why you really, really want to keep them dry if you don't want them to germinate. So if you soak a big seed for a few hours before you plant it, your plant is much quicker to start germinating in the ground, and like some of the little guys, just for a little bit. Stratify means to make cold for a predetermined time, period of time. So some seeds need to go through the winter to break that seed coat for it to start germinating. So you stick it in the freezer for 6 weeks, or you put it in the refrigerator for a month or something like that, and that's called stratifying. Now if you scarify, that means you actually damage the seed coats, like morning glories. They tell you to like take a nail file and scratch the coat, otherwise they'll come up next year. That's what scarify means. So those are a couple of things you can do to your seed. Another thing you can get is pelleted seeds. So petunias, tiny, tiny, tiny little seeds. And sometimes they pelletize them, which means they put clay, and they wrap each one in clay, and then you can plant that, and the clay wears off, and it makes it much easier to handle. All it is a clay. There's nothing bad in it. However, you can also get seeds that are pelleted and have a chemical on them, or you can get, as you can see, this corn has poisons on it. And the poisons are for several different things. Some of them are systemic insecticide that goes into the plant, and the plant grows, and everything dies that eats it, including bumblebees who use the pollen and things like that. Some of it is to protect the seed while it's being stored, so rats come, eat it, croak. Other thing is to keep weevils out or things like that. So you'll get a package of seed, and if it says not for food, it's meaning the seed itself is poisoned. I'm sorry, I don't want to mess with that much either. And especially if it's a systemic, you're putting that poison into your body because whatever you harvest off of that has that poison in it. So if it is poisoned, it's always going to be some bright, bright pink or green or yellow or blue color to it. And it'll usually say on the package that it has a chemical poison in it and what it is. Treated seed, yes.
Okay, next we're going to talk about seeds and plants. Where do your seeds and plants come from? Something to consider.
Okay. The Safe Seed Pledge that you see up here in the corner, that means that the company that is selling the seed has pledged that they will not knowingly sell or promote seeds that are GMO. So, to their best of their ability, they have tested and they have promised that they will not sell GMO seed. And so I try to support those companies as much as I can. And the four companies that donated seed for this class today, I've got their catalogs over there. All four of them have promised that they have that Safe Seed Pledge. Conventionally grown seed versus organically grown seed. You get that organic seed and it costs a whole lot more than the regular stuff. Conventionally grown seeds are raised with larger amounts of fertilizers and pesticides because that plant has to stay in the ground longer than the one that they're getting fruit off of. And so just from that standpoint, it's going through a lot more chemical processes. The other thing is that if this plant has been raised on chemical fertilizers and chemical insecticides and stuff, that's going to expect it in your garden. You know, you've raised a wussy seed, now it's going into your garden, and it's expecting to be pampered as well. And so if you get something raised organically, you're setting yourself up for a plant that's already used to growing without all the extra stuff. And so if you want to grow organically, that's a good way to do that. And then locally grown seeds is, you know, if you live in Maine and grow spinach, and you live in Arkansas and grow spinach, the spinach actually changes if you save seed, because the Arkansas spinach will start, you'll save the seed, the stuff that bolts, you know, the shorter bolting stuff, whereas Maine, it doesn't have to worry about bolt until, I don't know, like June or July. And so your seed will actually change according to your locality. And so if you get seed from where you're around, it's more acclimated to your climate, maybe even your soil and your water and things like that. And then plants. Most store and nursery plants have been treated with a systemic insecticides, which kill bees, earthworms, and other insects. They're wanting to put a perfect plant on that shelf for you to buy, because you don't want to buy an ugly plant, right? Well, when you bring that plant home, your organic garden has just immediately been sullied. And there's a really big problem going on right now with that, because we are killing bees bringing home flowers for the bees. And so when you go to your box store, ask. And so this is another way, is like support your local nurseries, because they will grow what you want to buy. And if we don't insist on buying a certain kind of plant, they're not going to give it to us. And a conventionally raised, I've already said this, it will contaminate your soil with residual chemicals and fertilizers as well. All right, we're speeding through this. Seeds and plants. If you want to save your seeds, label, because you will forget what it is, and then you're like, I have a tomato and I don't know what it is, or where it came from, and who I got it from, and or anything. Labeling is very, very important. And then storage. If you store your seeds in an airtight container and keep them in a cool, dry, dark place, so that would be, I like put mine in Ziploc baggies, and then put the entire box in the refrigerator. So I have three boxes, like shoe boxes of seeds, all alphabetically ordered in Ziploc bags, so it's real easy to get through that. Some people do mason jars, things like that.
We want to, if you're not saving your seeds currently, we want to encourage you to start that, because some are harder than others, but here are some easy seed savers: tomato, pepper, beans, and peas. And it just makes you more self-sufficient, and you save your own seeds, and your seeds get acclimated to your growing conditions as well.
And it's kind of fun, you know. Okay, one thing about seeds and plants, an idea to do, some people do strictly vegetables. I am no flowers. Flowers have no place in the vegetable garden. I know a few people like that. I beg to differ with that, because when you increase your plant diversity, you increase your predators that prey on the bad guys in your garden. Your lacewings, your ladybugs, your assassin bugs, they need certain types of flowers, like umbel flowers is what the lacewings need to, they get the nectar off that. An umbel flower would be a Queen Anne's lace, something like that. When you increase your plant diversity, you mix marigolds in with your cabbages, and you mix cosmos and things. That helps. It helps attract beneficial insects, gives them some place for their larvae to be. And then you also can have edible flowers. And so you can put that in your garden as well and make it beautiful. And when you increase density in your garden, it helps crowd out your weeds, and you can grow more in less space. Mr. Bartholomew with the square foot gardening idea, the French intensive gardening, those are two different systems that help use the most space that you can the most efficiently. And then the last thing is share your plants and seeds with others. Be generous. You know, you can get something amazing from a gardener, and it's a blessing, and it shows, you know, our Heavenly Father's given us a gift. And if we share that with others, if we can get other people excited and working towards this goal, it makes everything better.
Okay, what is this?
Good guy! I love ladybugs.
All right, next we want to talk about water. It's where we live, we're surrounded by lakes, and it's not such a big deal. We have seemingly unlimited supply through the tap, but it is a precious resource, and we should learn to conserve, because we may not always live in Michigan. And I'm sure some of you around Texas will know what I'm talking about.
All right, watering efficiently is a very important thing. When they did a study, the United States Environmental Conservancy did a study, and they found that most people are watering inefficiently and overwatering. And they, once they taught people how to water correctly, they could use much less water, and their plants were actually healthier. And so watering efficiently is very important. And that would be water in the morning rather than midday, because when you water in midday bright sun, you're losing most of your water evaporation. So there's a whole lot of money going down the drain. Or water in the evening when the wind is less, and then it has time to dry and do what it needs to do before it gets real, the sun comes up. And soak the ground thoroughly, but infrequently. So if you go out there and you pour, you know, your little two cups of water on a plant, and you're like, there, I watered it. Well, if you were to stick your finger in the ground a quarter inch down, it is bone dry, right? That did nothing for your plant except make you feel happy. And so when you water something, stand there and water the thing, but you may only have to do it once a week. Okay, so your soil type, of course, will affect your watering needs. Our sand, we have to water a lot. Somebody with great clay may not have to water at all. And then, so check your soil, examine your plants when you water. Your plants will usually tell you, well, I need water. Monitor weather reports and use a rain gauge. You know, how much rain has fallen this week? That might help. And then soak thoroughly with watering, of course, is very key. And then different watering techniques. There's sprinklers, which, love-hate relationship, it throws tons of water in the air, could waste it, but if that's what you got and that's how you're getting water down, that might work.
Watering by hand, we did that a couple years ago and decided that was a waste of our time because it took a lot of time.
It took me 6 hours three times a week to water.
So this year I added drip irrigation, which was very nice. You just turn it on and even get a timer or two, and it takes care of itself pretty much, and it wasn't too difficult. And soaker hoses is another idea of the drip irrigation type system.
I talk too much, so he keeps hitting me in the ribs. Go faster, go faster. All right, water sources. Rain barrels are great sources of water. Gray water, which is, you know, your rinse water, your tap water, while you're waiting for it to get hot. You can go through almost a gallon of water if you got a slow water heater. Well water is really good water. It doesn't have the chlorine and stuff in it like the city water does, chlorine and fluoride that city water has. So those are all different water sources. And then we're going to go through some myths that, you know, may or may not be true. We've all been told plants need 1 inch of water a week, right? That's a lawn thing. Most lawns need inch of water a week. Depending on your plant, it could need a whole lot more, or it could not really need that much. And depending on the stage of the plant and what time of year it is, if it's a mature tree, if you just planted a sapling, if you have tomato plants that have just gone in, if it's the middle of August, all those things affect how much water your garden actually needs. And so it's always changing. It's something you always have to be monitoring. Wilting is a sign you need water. Not necessarily. If you have overwatered your plant and it's drowning and it's gasping for air, it's going to be wilting. Also, if it's very, very hot, you know, if you've had a really hot August day and there's been an awful wind, dry, dry wind, your plant's just going to be like, I'm done. And that's where a sprinkler would be very helpful to help revive those plants and cool them down. They're kind of like people that way. And then overhead watering on a sunny day can scorch leaves. I was so sure of this. This is my, you can't water. Yeah, it doesn't work. The water droplet isn't big enough to cause the right refraction to burn your leaves. Scorching is done by many other things. And you might correlate that, but it's not an actual, it won't actually scorch your leaves. And avoid overhead watering. Generally true, although it can be beneficial to wash dust off leaves, which if they can't get the photosynthesis going because their leaves are dirty, that's helpful. It can also remove aphids and mites. A good hard spray on a plant can knock those things off. And it might help relieve heat stress plants. And then drought-tolerant plants don't need water. That is not true. They need just as much water as other plants. They can survive without as much water. And so when you first plant a plant, any kind of plant, it needs to have water. Once it gets established, once it's got rain on it, you can probably let it go a little bit. But you have to water those echinaceas when you first plant them. They are not going to be happy if you don't. And then you're going to lose your plants.
Okay, this is a 1950s diagram of a turnip which shows roots over 4 feet deep, and over half of plant roots are invisible to the naked eye, and root balls are much bigger than we realize, hence the raise in our soil depth really significantly helped our output last year, or this year.
And that's where soil compaction comes in. I mean, if you think, I'm 2 feet out from my tomato plant. Well, you're still stomping on its roots if you've not got it contained.
So what's this?
Yes, it's a lace wing. Good guy. Very, very good guy.
It's helpful to know the different stages because then you're not
killing the wrong thing.
All right. Integrated pest management. IPM uses information on the life cycles of pests in combination with available pest control methods to manage pest damage by the most economical means and with the least possible hazard to the environment.
That was a huge statement. But this is a very important. The first thing is be in your garden. If you're not in your garden on a daily basis or a semi-regular basis, you're not going to see the things change, and you're not going to see how or why they changed. And know your bugs. We have a semi-funny policy of kill it first, drag it inside, and see what it is on the internet. But know what your bugs are. If you kill all your ladybug larvae or all your lacewing larvae because they look scary, well, then you just wiped out your entire predator population. Here's some non-chemical measures of keeping bugs is hand picking. If it's gross and you don't like it, you can take the whole leaf off. Bucket of soapy water, knock it into that. Wear gardening gloves. I get to where I'm just like squish, 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 squish. Squash bugs are squish bugs. Physical barriers, your Remé cloth, deer net, real fine netting will keep out different things. Plastic, you know, like if you do a greenhouse type shield, those are all physical barriers that will help keep bugs away from your, you know, your squash plants and things like that. And then blast with water. If you got a kid with a squirt gun and you want to send him out to do something, shoot all the aphids and, you know, that kind of idea.
Or you can send them out for a bunny patrol.
And then beware of chemical solutions. There's two types of chemicals. One is topical, which means you put it on the plant. The bug comes, eats the plant, and he falls over dead. But then when the rain comes, it washes that off. A lot of your organic chemical barriers, your organic insecticides, those are topical. A systemic means it goes in the plant. So that means the whole entire plant is poisonous, including the fruit, which you are going to be eating. And maybe you aren't as susceptible to chemicals that kill the insides of a bug, but that's still something going into your system that's not food. So those are things to be aware of.
Go at it.
Yes, slug patrol is great at night. You can see the moths and things like that. Homemade sprays, we're not going to go into like giving you recipes, but if you go online, there's some great homemade sprays that include neem, dish oil, dishwater soap, oils, things like that.
No recipes.
We have no recipes, sorry. And then application timing. There's something called degree days. And the way insects work is they will grow when it's a certain temperature above 50 degrees, and then they will stop growing when it gets below that temperature. So they're chucking along growing, and all of a sudden it gets cold, they just go, okay, not growing anymore. And then they'll start growing again, and then they'll stop. So if you understand how many degree days it takes for a coddling moth to go from its egg through its five instars, which is each molting, to an adult, you know when to spray or put an application on of whatever it is you use to stop that at the best point, which would be when the egg would hatch. And so this is a way that you can be smarter than the bug and use the minimum amount of sprays if you're going to use them. To beat the system. And it also tells you when to go out and pick things, you know, like if you want a hand pick. And then you have sacrificial plants, which is a plant that you're growing specifically to die. So it attracts all the squash bugs and you can destroy that, so it saves other plants. And the, yes, hubbards are great. And then no monocultures. Man is the only person that plants monocultures or creates monocultures. If you look in nature, there's all kinds of things all mixed up together. So that makes it harder for the insects to just go down a row and go mowing. Okay, so mix up stuff. Put things in different places. Put things around other things. And that will help you to be more successful. And always remember, your environment, your plants, and your insects are affected by what you put in your soil. And anything you put in your soil is going to ultimately affect you and your children and the people you feed.
Swabbing something inside.
Mm-hmm. He's right.
He was right there. That little bitty white thing was him.
Yeah, we have these guys on our raspberry plants, but. If I had more time, I'd tell you more.
Thanks.
The 5-hour version of this class is later.
All right, next we want to talk about organic. And a very basic definition of organic is organic gardening is gardening without synthetic fertilizers and pesticides. There's some good rules in organics, and we'll talk about those.
The USDA organic seal verifies that irradiation, sewage sludge, which is human sewage sludge, synthetic fertilizers, prohibited pesticides, and genetically modified organisms are not included in that.
But organic has some pitfalls, and some of that is the rules and regulations of what you can't do with little guidance of what you can do. So just because something's said to be organic, there's a wide range of what that actually means.
Like, you can get a polyphase chicken, which has been running around outside on grass and eating good stuff, or you can get an organic farm lot chicken who's had this much space its entire life and has just been fed organic feed. World of difference between the two chickens. The USDA notes that the terms such as organic and free range address only the production process of food and not its final quality or nutritional value. Very small. Yes. They're actually very pretty moths. But we still squish them.
They're hard to catch. The moths, yes.
Very attractive, don't.
Okay. This is a part that I've been researching this year in particular, and it's exciting to me because it gives me a goal, and we're talking about beyond organic here, going beyond the organic rules and maximizing your nutrition. And some of the issues that we want to be combating when we're thinking about going beyond organic is the depleted and dead soil, poor plants, bug and disease infested. Again, the healthier soil, healthier plants, the less susceptible they will be to bugs and disease. A low quality and poor tasting fruit and veggies. Your kids, they don't like veggies. Well, if they're so nutritionally inferior, they don't taste good, they've been sitting on a market shelf for weeks, that's part of the problem. And unhealthy people and animals as a result. So some of the goals that we want to look at is nutrient dense crops to reverse the trend and bring that back up. Healthier plants, which better resists pests and disease. And then ultimately healthier people, which is our main goal.
Okay. The benefits of growing your own are many. You're in control. You're in control of what kind of seeds you get, what kind of plants you get, what kind of soil you have, what you put on that, what kind of water you do, what goes in, all of that. You're in control of that. And so that is a really wonderful place to be able to be, so you know you're getting and doing the best you can to feed the temple of the Holy Spirit so that you are able to be a good servant to Him. If we're sick, we're not very good servants. You can also save your own healthy seed. You know what plant that seed came from. When you get seed from someone else, you don't really know how healthy that plant was or how it was raised. And the last one is food supply independence. I'm not saying that the whole world's going to end tomorrow, but at some point, if you aren't able to, you know, if all the shelves got cleared at Walmart, are you able to feed your family today? Are you able to take care of your neighbors tomorrow? Are you able to be a servant and be where Yahweh wants us to be and take care of those around us? If you know how to do this, that is something that will be a wonderful blessing to the people around you.
Okay, these are some things we mentioned researching, and that's what we've been doing. And these are some things we plan to do for next year. Not saying that you need to do this, but just to give you some ideas. Remineralizing the soil. Soil tests, looking for the macronutrients. I mean, there's a broad range of tests and what they mean, and expense can go into that. So it's something you may or may not want to do. We're going to be adding some what they call rock dust or azomite, which is A to Z of minerals, and that's for the micronutrients, and as well as sea salt, which you can make a mixture and put in your soil or just put it right on your plants and it will kill some of the bugs. And you think salt, adding salt to my plants, I would just kill it. Well, you got to be in moderation. And it's just something we're going to do some testing with. Improving the soil health, we're going to be adding organic matter, which is compost, which will add the microbes to your soil and Teeming with Microbes is a book that I'm currently reading, which is going to help me understand how all that works. Compost tea is another thing which, from what I understand, you spray that on your plants, it'll actually make your plants healthier and stronger and more resistant to create a barrier from disease and bugs. And a Brix refractometer is something that I purchased this year. It's around $30. You can get it at Amazon. But the idea behind that is it's just a status tool. You can get some liquid out of your plants, and it'll look at the soluble solids in it and tell you a number. And there's a chart for somebody who went through and said, okay, for example, bad bean might be a 4, a good bean might be a 6, and an excellent bean might be an 8. And the idea is the higher that number you get, the more healthy your plant is. And this is just going to be a status tool for me to test year to year and see if am I improving, am I getting somewhere.
Okay. An important reminder is replenish the soil every year. What you put in, you gotta, you know, what you take out, you have to put back in. And one thing is, if you use just the compost from your yard, if you don't have something in your soil already, it's not going to magically appear. If you don't have enough magnesium in your soil, which is one of your micronutrients, but it's very important, it's not going to magically appear. You have to make sure that's balanced. So when you, it's a bank account. Put in, take out. Cover crops, grasses, legumes, those are excellent ways to add nitrogen. Some of those cover crops have extremely deep roots where they'll go down into the rock part of the soil, pull up nutrients from that, and make it available at the top layer of the soil. And then rotate your crops, which is very important. Rotating your crops helps not only each crop group takes out different nutrients, but it also helps keep insects and disease at bay, because if you move it, the disease, which has no legs, can't go with it. And your bugs that all got laid in the soil are like, where'd they go when they come up? So that's another thing to do.
Here's some other important recommendations.
Okay. Grow a diversity of crops. Don't grow just one thing. Grow lots of different things. And that's both in like tomatoes, beans, all of these kind of things, and then also within tomatoes. You can grow little tomatoes and big tomatoes and beefsteak tomatoes and paste tomatoes and jelly bean tomatoes. So you can figure out what works well, and you also have a variety of things that way.
Right, along with the reason for a diversity as well is you can see what works best in your soil, you can see what you like best, and you get a variety of nutrients because different plants capitalize in different nutrients.
He's not pushing the button fast enough. Some things may do better in different years. Like this year was an absolutely horrible year for tomatoes and peppers where we were. 40-degree nights and 50-degree nights do not make for happy peppers and tomato plants. I had 50 tomato plants. I was underwhelmed with tomatoes, which is so sad. So, but we had, you know, if you had brassicas in the ground, man, they were happy all summer. So every year's different. So if you have a variety, something's going to do good. Hopefully. And then the different crops maximize different nutrients.
And very important, I've seen gardeners who are all excited. They start out and they put their garden in, and they just lose interest. It's like, oh, too much work, and their food's just rotting on the vine and falling. And eat what you grow. That's the whole point. So we want to remind you. And make sure you harvest to maximize nutrition. So part of that we're missing in the store, for example, is they pick stuff early. They may spray it to make it turn colors for you and make it keep longer. But the longer it can ripen naturally, it will pull those nutrients from the soil. It will
be sweeter,
create the sweeter taste and be healthier for you. And then you want to preserve your crops, especially, I mean, as you're getting bigger and bigger gardens, learn how to do that, and that can be canning, drying, freezing. and share extra with others, encourage them, say, this is from my garden, and they say, oh, that tastes so good, and they begin to get interested that way as well.
The last thing is keep learning and experimenting. I'm an advanced master gardener. That does not mean that I'm like smarter. It just means that I've put more time into learning. I've put more time into volunteering and things like that. And I learned something. Okay, here's book 5,482 of gardening that I pull out of the library. Let's see if I can learn something new. And there is. There's always someone who's coming up with a great idea or re-implementing something or sharing something that has helped them. And the more you learn, the more you understand. Gardening is vast. I mean, it's Thomas Edison said, I'm an old man but a young gardener. And that is so, so, so true. Not Thomas Edison, Thomas Jefferson. Sorry, wrong Thomas. That's very, very true. It's something you will never, ever be bored at, because just about the time you think you got it, everything goes wrong and you start all over. So it's not to discourage you or anything, but you'll never get bored.
Yes, there's a lot of factors of why that plant failed. And so it's a puzzle sometimes.
Okay, I wrote several seed companies, and I had four seed companies generously give me seeds. So Baker Creek Heirloom Seeds, this is their website, and we'll come back to this. Johnny Select Seeds, Baker Creek sells pretty much heirloom organic seeds. Johnny sells both and hybrids as well, but they have an excellent They're a magazine resource book. It has all this information with temperatures and how to germinate and information about all this stuff. It's like a manual, and I keep their keep it for that. They also have organic seeds, and they also have done the Safe Seed Pledge. High mowing organic seeds and Southern Exposure Seed Exchange have all donated seeds. So each person gets to take a baggie of seed. There's four kinds of seed in there. They might have two tomatoes or whatever. We tried to split it all up, not knowing how many people would get. But want to definitely thank them for that. And then they also have their catalogs here, so if you want to take them home with you.
Yes, please do. We did not want to take them back with us.
The car was too full on the way here. And if you would like to take, like, a catalog for your brother or, you know, your friend or something, that's fine, too. This is very small. We'll go back to this too, but these are different websites. The first one is our website, and I'm talking and he's supposed to be.
Yeah, and growingyourgreens.com, this guy named John Kohler, he basically videos, maybe you've heard some of his YouTube videos, but you can learn a lot just going through his videos. He's got 800 plus some and several thousand viewers, but anyway. Back to eating film, it's encouraging film, which taught us the idea with using mulch, and so we really got into that after watching that video. And bugeye.net is for bug identifications.
Very helpful.
And
then rare seeds.
Rare seeds, yep. And some of the gardening books that we've been reading this past month are listed there as well. So.
We also have a blog, a garden blog, on our
website.
On our website, and it's the good, the bad, the ugly. So you can mourn with us, you can laugh at us, you can. Oh, that was actually pretty cool. So it kind of just tells you what we've done, and we take pictures of everything. Like I start all my seed as much as I can. So it's got from A to Z how I start seed, our light rack, how to make a cheap light rack, and all that kind of stuff. So we have a few minutes left. We're going to take questions. We're going to go through as many as we can, and then we're going to close on time. You may get that. If you want to keep asking questions, we're fine with that. Okay?
Yep. And not all the seed packets are the same because we were given a selection. So if you want to trade, mix and match, you're welcome to do that. Stick around.
Pieces of paper and baggies. So if you want to split a seed packet that has 500 seeds in it and you want to share with somebody, you know, like you can dump it out right on the piece of paper. I would do that. So I'm assuming all of you would do that. That is available there. Okay?
Yes. And so if you stick around even longer, you may get some extra seeds. So benefits for sticking around.
Anything home.
questions?